Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is, along with Cam Edwards, co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. Jim is in high demand this week due to the release of Heavy Lifting, so he joins us from the road. Jim, our good martini today comes courtesy of House Republicans. This is the Fox News version of the story. House Republicans on Tuesday introduced a resolution to impeach IRS Commissioner John Koskinen, accusing him of making false statements under oath and failing to comply with a subpoena for evidence. House Oversight Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz and 18 other committee members introduced the resolution to begin impeachment proceedings. In doing so, they followed through on a threat first made over the summer when Republicans accused the IRS leader of making inaccurate statements to Congress regarding the Tea Party targeting scandal and its aftermath. Chaffetz said, quote, Commissioner Koskinen violated the public trust. He failed to comply with a congressionally issued subpoena. Documents were destroyed on his watch, and the public was consistently misled. He went on to say impeachment is the appropriate tool to restore public confidence in the IRS and protect the institutional interests of Congress. The IRS issued a statement later saying the IRS vigorously disputes the allegations in the resolution. We have fully cooperated with all of the investigations. So, Jim, following through, good work.
This is actually one of the cheerier bits of news we've had in a while. It's kind of a nice counterpart to the news that Lois Lerner would not be facing any criminal prosecution for anything that she did while she was head of the IRS. When she left town, there was this attitude, okay, things are going to be better. There's a new sheriff in town. You can count on the IRS. And it's very clear, meet the new boss. He's the same as the old boss. Finally, there are some consequences. We will see how this impeachment proceeding works out. But, you know, and Congress has always had this power. I think it's very interesting that, you know, finally now in year seven, heading into the eighth year of the Obama administration, do we see a Republican Congress seriously examining this power, this authority? Because I'm sure we can all think of various previous cabinet officials who probably should have faced a threat like this, if not for criminal behavior, then for utter incompetence. Whether you want to say it was Sebelius at HHS for healthcare.gov, or folks at the EPA for that Yellow River spill, or for Office of Personnel Management for not protecting classified information, or for the Veterans Administration. I mean, this is kind of a long overdue step to try to restore accountability, and we don't get to say this very often, so hey, you know, nice job, House Republicans.
There you go. But now let's switch to the bad martini, because the House Republicans did something else yesterday that doesn't make us very happy. On Tuesday, the House voted 313 to 118 to restart the Export-Import Bank. A lot of Democrats and some more moderate Republicans like the Export-Import Bank. They think it helps to promote U.S. products abroad. Those who don't like it think it's a massive bit of crony capitalism that just rewards the well-connected and drains the taxpayer wallet at the same time. So, Jim, we thought this was dead in June, but it's back.
Yeah, and I think probably one of the most surprising folks who I saw saying this was a good move was Hugh Hewitt, the conservative radio talk show host and moderator, or one of the questioners for the CNN debate. Hugh said it was very important for the companies in the defense industry. Greg, don't we pay a lot for our fighter jets and planes and tanks and all the other stuff we buy from defense contractors?
Yes.
How much more help do they need? Look, the Export-Import Bank is one of the rare cases you could point to conservatives and government actually reducing government. And it seemed like some of the most low-hanging fruit, that this was something that a lot of people saw as amounting to corporate welfare. Of all the people who the government could be helping, these guys are fairly unsympathetic. You know, you're supposed to, if they're such great companies, private banks should be able to make these loans. So very frustrating, very clear, unfortunately, that even though there are a lot of Republicans in the House, there are not necessarily a great number of fiscal conservatives who would see this as one of the areas that they can start cutting government spending.
And here's one of the odd twists in this. I spoke last week with Congressman Tom McClintock, a former member of the House Freedom Caucus, and he said the reason that this happened, he said it was dead and buried because in the Republican conference, this was not going to get through because the majority of the Republican conference opposed it. But he said, with the House Freedom Caucus going to the floor to fight on various issues, it opened the door for a discharge petition for a minority of Republicans to team with a lot of Democrats to force this to the House floor, and it passed. So while he says that he's very much in line with the heart of what the Freedom Caucus wants to do, he says sometimes the tactics end up working very much against what the Freedom Caucus wants to do. So I don't know how much you've heard about that, but if that's true, that's a very interesting twist to this story.
It is. I remember somebody once explaining to me the difference between a conservative and a right-wing radical. A conservative cares about how he achieves his goal as much as achieving the goal itself. A right-wing radical doesn't care how they get it. If the tactics of the House Freedom Caucus are opening doors for policy developments like this one, maybe it's time for him to take a deep breath and look and see. Dr. Phil McGraw used to say, hey, how's that working out for you? You know, maybe it's not working out so well for House Freedom Caucus.
Yes, there needs to be a nice balance there, because there's justifiable frustration with the leadership, and we'll see how the new leadership works under Paul Ryan, who will be elected by Republicans to be their nominee for tomorrow's speaker vote on the House floor. But when it comes to actually affecting that change, there has to be a smart way to do it. So there's got to be a happy balance there somewhere. On to the crazy martini now. And as most of you know, tonight is debate number three night. It's on CNBC. It's being held on the campus of the University of Colorado. And here's what some folks are worried about just hours before this debate. This is from Politico. Just hours before GOP candidates take the stage here Wednesday night, tensions over the Republican National Committee's handling of the debates are flaring anew. At issue this time, green rooms. During a tense 30-minute meeting at the Coors Event Center, which was described by three sources present, several lower polling campaigns lashed out at the RNC. They accused the committee of allotting them less than hospitable green room spaces while unfairly giving lavish ones to higher polling candidates such as Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Apparently, Marco Rubio got a theater. Carly Fiorina's room had a jacuzzi. Chris Christie had a small space dominated by a toilet. So did Rand Paul. Jim, it's kind of hard to go out on stage and talk about how you're there for the little guy when you've spent most of your prep time griping about your green room.
I put up a corner post about this, and somebody said, hey, you know, it's not like they're out there whining on the campaign trail. These are campaign staffers whose job is to take care of the candidate, complaining to the RNC logistics people and advanced people whose job is to set up these things. Greg, I might have more sympathy for this if it hadn't been preceded by Jeb Bush telling us, hey, there are a lot of way cooler stuff I could be doing than running for president if this is the way it's going to be. Hillary Clinton saying, Bernie Sanders accused me of shouting, and that's obviously sexism. And Donald Trump preemptively saying, the candidates are, he doesn't expect tonight to be fair. I'm just tired of the whining, Greg. You know, you're running for president of the United States. Suck it up, okay? You're not I don't want to see divas running for president. You're going to have some tough times. You know, if you can't handle the subpar dressing room, get out of the race now, okay? You know, like, you're going to have much tougher moments than that. And yes, it's kind of ridiculous, and yes, it indicates the argument that, you know, the networks are playing favorites and maybe the venue organizers are playing favorites. But, you know, look, if you can't overcome this obstacle, I just don't think you're going to be POTUS.
You know, how did the University of Colorado know there's going to be 15 candidates in the race this time? And, you know, if you want better accommodations, do better.
Yeah, that's, you know, like, there could only be one presidential suite. You know, that's one of the cars of presidential suite. If you're lucky, maybe you get the vice presidential suite.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess those guys are upset. They ended up with the Secretary of Labor's suite.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that doesn't get involved in the opening statements. I'd hate to see Chris Christie or Rand Paul go there.
You think you got a lousy room? Let me tell you.
Anyway, Jim, have a good day. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about following the debate tomorrow. Have a good one.
Have a good day, Greg. Take care.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.